What a win by the Boston Celtics. Most impressive win of the season? I think so. Let's do it, Millie's. Let's go. Rainy Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly.
Well, I didn't expect that. Boston Celtics beating the Utah Jazz 114-103 in the final game of this road trip on a back-to-back after a game in Portland, crossing over a time zone in altitude. I did not expect the Boston Celtics to play that game, a game that complete. I was surprised and pleasantly surprised and very impressed. I think this might be the most impressive win of the season. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. I'm back in Boston. I'm not in Utah. I'm back in Boston. I flew across country from Portland and watched most of this game on the plane. So I'm looking forward to rewatching this on a big enough screen where I can get some of the nuance. But I thought this game was a lot of fun. And the Celtics came out strong, gave up a run, and on a back-to-back, I thought, okay, look, they're going to come out strong. That's not really unexpected on a back-to-back. It's not surprising that they would come out with a lot of energy. It's that's usually, you know, coming into a game, you get yourself hype, you get yourself into this mental place. This kind of you whip yourself into a frenzy, but then on the back-to-back, usually what'll happen is you'll lose that energy, especially after halftime. And the Celtics not only didn't, they won both the third and the fourth quarters. They extended leads. They got big performances from everybody. Everybody important. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that. Gordon Hayward didn't have the biggest performance, but they got a lot of big performances in this game. So obviously we start with who else? Jason Tatum. And as Tom Westerholm tweeted after the game, he's kind of running out of ways to say, hey, how about Jason Tatum, huh? But hey, how about Jason Tatum, huh? This is that dude right here, man. 13 of 20 shooting, 33 points, another 30-point game. He is just playing out of his mind right now. In February, he's averaging 30.5 points per game. He's shooting 51% from the field, 50% from three, 78% from the line. I keep saying this is unsustainable because it's not. A wing doesn't shoot 50% from the field. A guy who takes the shots that Tatum takes doesn't generally shoot 50% from the field. He certainly doesn't shoot 50% from three. At some point, he's going to come back down to earth, right? Like, I thought it might happen on this road trip, but clearly not. Clearly, he's just on one right now. He is just playing with more confidence than I ever realized. Like, he is just playing with this level of confidence that is driving him to make some ridiculous shots, really honestly ridiculous shots. He's hitting shots right now that he's never hit before, or not definitely not this consistently. So Tatum is just out of his mind. I don't know any other way to put it. He's just playing out of his mind. The second quarter was the big quarter. More than half of his points came in that, because he had 18 in the second quarter. 7 of 9, 2 of 3 from 3, a couple of free throws. Just that if it wasn't for him in that second quarter, then maybe Utah pulls this thing out, because that second quarter was the duel between him and Donovan Mitchell, who had 37 on the night and was just awesome. In that second quarter, Donovan Mitchell had 20, and there was Tatum counteracting Donovan Mitchell's huge mega explosion. That just, if it wasn't for Tatum doing what he did and out-dueling, or not out-dueling, but just dueling Donovan to a standstill, then the Jazz might turn around and win this game. So Tatum obviously fuels things, but then also impressive performances overall from Jaylen Brown, who was very good in the third quarter. The third quarter was, let me just pull up the third quarter numbers here. Jaylen Brown's big quarter, he had 10 points in there, 4 of 6 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3. He was feeling it. Like, Tatum went out, and it was like, all right, we need somebody to step up. And JB comes in, and just, it's just like I was saying in the last podcast. Oh, by the way, I need to apologize for the ending of the last podcast, which was done at 3 a.m. in Portland, and somehow the ending of that podcast got cut off. There's a point where like the last 5 minutes got cut off, and I only realized it as the thing was posting. And then I was like, you know what? I'm sorry. I've got to go to bed. So I apologize for the ending of yesterday's podcast. I was going on something about Daniel Tice. I'm sure it really wasn't that important, but I just wanted to put that out there. But as I was saying in yesterday's podcast, you have this Tatum-Brown dynamic again with both of these guys playing well. Like, Jaylen Brown had a very good game. 20 points on 8 of 16 shooting, 3 of 6 from 3. So he hits half of his shots. He only 1 of 2 from the line. But 6 rebounds, a couple of assists, only 1 turnover. The Celtics, by the way, only 8 turnovers on the game, which is unreal on a back-to-back. But Jaylen Brown also, you throw in a block for Jaylen Brown. That's a nice night. You look at that night, you're like, wow, man, this kid is good. And once again, I got to remind myself and everybody else, I guess, sometimes that, oh, by the way, Jaylen Brown's really good. He just happens to be playing well at the same time that Jason Tatum is playing out of his damn mind. So, and Tatum, by the way, 11 rebounds, 33 points, 11 rebounds. So just a phenomenal combination, again, combining for more than 50 points. It's such a great combination with those two guys. And then in the fourth quarter, Marcus Smart goes off. Marcus Smart had the sequence in the fourth quarter that was just wild. 3 straight threes out of nowhere, because that's what Marcus Smart does. He was 0 for 5 at that point from 3. And then boom, 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 3 straight threes. And then just when you think he's going to launch a heat check, and I was like, oh, here comes the air ball. He dumps one down. I think it was to Daniel Tice. Was it Daniel Tice or Enes Kanter? I forget who it was down low. But a phenomenal pass, and they get a bucket. So in the course of like a minute, he goes off and hits 3 shots, gets that assist, gets a steal. I mean, just a wild finish to the fourth quarter for him. I gotta say, the Celtics did a wonderful job defensively. We didn't hear anything about Bojan Bogdanović. Dude scored 3 points. He was nothing. He was a 0 in this game. That was their key acquisition over the summer. And he's really good. And they got nothing. Utah got nothing out of him. Marcus Smart had some turns on him and really did a good job. Rudy Gobert, non-factor in this game. 9 points, 9 rebounds, couple of blocks, but nowhere near the impact that he should have in this game. The whole thing about the Celtics and the Jazz is they've got the size. They've got Rudy Gobert. They got the Stifle Tower and blah, blah, blah. The Celtics just neutralized them. They were hitting their shots. They were hitting their threes. Utah was not hitting their shots, and they didn't get anything going with Rudy Gobert. The Celtics did not let them get any sort of pick and roll going, and they did a fantastic job just limiting the Jazz, limiting some key players for the Jazz. It really was only Donovan Mitchell that went off. They got some numbers from Royce O'Neal. They got some numbers from Mike Conley, who didn't shoot well but got hot from three. They got a little bit of a contribution from like Jordan Clarkson off the bench, but he took a lot of shots. George Nyang, Lawrence, Massachusetts owned, by the way, came in and did a couple of things, nice things, but like nothing big. So very impressed. I'm very impressed by this Boston Celtics performance. It was wild to hear everybody booing Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter. We're going to talk about that next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Boy, those Utah Jazz fans just don't forget, do they? It's been a few years since Gordon Hayward left Utah, and those fans just relentlessly booing him every time he touched the ball, which is fine. They can do what they want. It's just wild that they are still this upset. And considering that things have worked out fairly well for them, they've moved on pretty nicely. They've got a nice team. I'm not saying they should cheer the guy, but like, I don't know. It's kind of nuts to see how much of a grudge they carry in Utah. And Enes Kanter felt that too. Although Enes Kanter on his way out did say that Utah fans were the worst fans in the league. So at first I was like, why are they booing him? And then that's right. He did say that they were the worst fans in the NBA. In fact, the quote, I have it. I looked it up. Their crowd might be the worst crowd to play in front of because it's just like, I know that crowd is just like, it's terrible. Because I remember they used to boo Deron Williams. They used to boo me a lot. They used to boo a few other players. And then none of them had a really, really good game. If you got booed, you always have a bad game. So he just didn't like playing in Utah. He was traded to OKC, and he loves OKC, but the Utah fans can be tough, man. It's a passionate fan base. It's a real passionate fan base. If you're one of their favorites, they're going to love you, but that passion will say bleeds into some maybe less than savory behavior. And that exists in every city. I'm sure that exists plenty, that even if I haven't heard about it in Boston, like there are plenty of people who take it to an extreme level. But Utah seems to be even at a different level than that. And so they'll boo Gordon Hayward forever. He'll be 70 years old in Utah for something, and they'll boo him grabbing a coffee. Like that's the level of anger there. But the Celtics did a fantastic job of getting through that. And Marcus Smart was very careful to say that this was a game that the Celtics wanted to win for Gordon Hayward, especially because it's tough for Hayward. It's tough for, you know, a guy that was still, you know, he had his reasons for leaving, and whatever, it's a player's choice. But having gone through the injury and all of that stuff, the Celtics, I'm sure, really wanted to make sure that they could get the win So Gordon Hayward could leave Utah with a win. And now the next step is Gordon Hayward going to Utah and having big games, because he did okay, but he didn't have a big game. Only shot 4 of 12. The shots came at pretty good times, and you know, he had 5 rebounds and 2 assists. So he was generally okay, minus the missed shots. And maybe he was feeling it a little bit more than other guys, because he was just short on everything in this game. But a nice win for the Celtics and for Gordon Hayward. Going to wrap this up by talking about some of the other guys who made some unheralded contributions next.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Lockdown Celtics on Instagram.
Well, once again, Daniel Theis was a big factor in this. And 16 points, 7 rebounds, and assists. He outplayed Rudy Gobert. How about that? Daniel Theis outplayed Rudy Gobert. He had a couple of putbacks, 4 offensive rebounds. Of those 7 rebounds, 4 were offensive. Big putback dunk late in the game, third quarter. Or maybe it was the fourth. I don't remember. But it was just a very impressive game by Daniel Theis. He just continues to show his worth. And I'm very happy that people can finally maybe shut up about needing a big. And the best part about this is the Celtics have him locked up next year for $5 million. And, you know, that's a nice number for a guy that has been doing everything that he's been doing. And now we're looking at the potential of getting Robert Williams back, who went through workouts before the game. You saw, like, Tom Westerholm tweeted out a video of him working out. He's jumping, he's flying around. He's really playing well right now. And so the Celtics center position looks a lot better than it did, than we thought it would at this point. And if Rob can come back and be effective, then we don't have what happened in the second quarter, where Enes Kanter, I think, was again the catalyst for an opposing guard's run and, you know, playing a drop pick and roll coverage where Donovan Mitchell started to attack and get clean looks, because that's how Enes Kanter has to play. And then all of a sudden Donovan Mitchell goes off, and the Celtics obviously withstood that. But that's something that can't really happen that much. And it certainly can't happen in a playoff series where the Celtics, they just can't have a player out there for extended period of time that is going to be a detriment, that's going to be a net negative that the other team can attack. So I thought that Daniel Theis, and in the combination of him and Grant Williams, did a very nice job. And the Kanter damage was minimized, and he actually ended up playing better and more like the guy that was playing well despite his limitations. So Kanter playing a little bit better than he has been recently is important. Got to shout out Brad Wanamaker, who had a big fourth quarter, especially by Brad Wanamaker standards, but he went out there and hit a couple of shots. Brad Stevens says they actually ran a couple of plays for him in that fourth quarter that helped the Celtics kind of settle down, that he hit some key shots. That, you know, his 5 points, Kanter had 6, Smart had 9. I mean, Smart, Wanamaker, Kanter were the guys that were carrying the offense in the fourth quarter. And so maybe that's the most impressive thing, that and that can be impressive for Jason Tatum as well, that Jason Tatum gets blitzed, Jason Tatum gets double teamed, he plays the entire fourth quarter, they want to take the ball out of his hands, and so he gives it up, and Marcus Smart goes off, and Brad Wanamaker makes plays, and Kanter gets a couple of buckets there, 3 of them, and the Celtics get production out of guys that, you know, non-Tatum production. Tatum was 1 of 4. The Celtics were 11 of 15 in that fourth quarter, minus, you know, if you take Tatum's production out, that's really, really good. And a reminder that the Boston Celtics are more than just Jason Tatum. And we know that. We've seen this team this entire season. So we know that this team isn't just Tatum. This month, it's been mostly about him. This road trip has been mostly about him. And the narrative switches very quickly. So it's very easy to fall into that trap of saying, hey, this is, you know, this is Tatum's team. It's all about Tatum. And if you shut him down, then what happens? But Celtics doing a good job. Like, yeah, okay, you want to shut him down? Well, Jaylen Brown will hit shots, and Marcus Smart will hit shots. And now if you get Wanamaker in there and into the mix, and you get Tice rolling and getting some buckets and some easy finishes, and you toss Robert Williams in there, and oh, by the way, Kemba Walker, who could come back and play on Saturday night. The Celtics are off on Thursday. They'll practice on Friday, and Kemba could be back and ready to play on Saturday. So we'll see. Maybe, maybe not. Nothing definitive, but they were saying that it's possible. Throw him into this mix, and now who do you guard? You know? So it's impressive in that fourth quarter that not only did the Celtics at the end of this road trip pull away in a fourth quarter and outscore Utah by 8 and extend their lead, they did it with guys other than Tatum. They did it without Kemba Walker. They did it with guys coming off of the bench, which we've been, you know, we've been expressing a lot of consternation about the bench units, and here they come giving the Celtics production and much needed production. Not a lot, not a ton, but something better than zero, better than the 10 points that they were getting from the bench before in other games this series. So Wanamaker coming in and scoring 8 and Cantor coming in and scoring 8, that's important. Obviously, the bulk of the scoring was done by the starters. That's how it's always going to be with this team. But the bench stepping up down the stretch when they were needed is good. Like, they obviously, it's good, John. But that's impressive. When the starting unit at the end of this road trip was, I don't know, I don't want to say gassed, but, you know, neutralized to some degree, the bench came in and did some things that were impressive. So the Celtics, I'm telling you, man, they really did impress me. You have them sitting here now in the third seed, and the separation is really evident now that Milwaukee is clearly the number one. Boston and Toronto, there's one game separating those two teams now. They're both winning more than 70% of their games. They're both equal in point differential. They both are 8-2 in their last 10. And Toronto, with all of their winning that they've done, only a game ahead of Boston. So that's the battle right there, 2-3. Miami, tough loss. Philly, another loss. Like, those teams are just, I mean, I don't know who wants what there, but that 4-5-6 is going to be interesting, especially if Boston, we don't know if they're going to be 2 or 3. That 6-7 is something to watch for. That 4-5-6, Miami, Philly, Indy, it's two games that separates those three. Miami is a half game up on Philly. Philly just lost to Cleveland. I mean, come on. They on the road, they're 9-21 on the road. Indy could be in a position here to maybe sneak up a little bit, but If the Celtics stay third right now, at this moment, it's Indy. It could be Philly. I would hope to avoid that. I really would like to avoid that, personally. I know that they're a mess. I know that I know everything about, like, they're hurt, and I don't like the idea. Like, let them lose to somebody else. I'd rather just, I don't want to take that chance, because the way the Celtics have looked against Philly this year, minus that one game, I'm not too thrilled about it. So anyway, that 4-5-6 grouping is at some, that's going to be the grouping. Somewhere in that 4-5-6 is going to be Miami, Philly, Indy, just the, what order. And then 7-8 is going to be Brooklyn and Orlando, with a very outside shot of Washington, but I don't think Washington's got exactly what it takes to make a run, but they could be helped by Brooklyn or Orlando just falling apart, and Brooklyn could. So it looks like, though, the eight East teams are set, and it's just a matter of where did the Celtics finish, two or three, and where do the other teams finish, 4-5-6, and do the Celtics ascend to a spot where they can get a 2-7 matchup, which would be ideal. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'll keep an eye on that. We'll talk more about that. I want to thank everybody for sticking with the podcast. It gets a little tough on the road. I'm not going to lie. It gets a little tough on the road when you're going from city to city, and there's, you know, post games that you just kind of not in your comfort zone. So I apologize for the mix up yesterday, and you know, hopefully, you know, that's a one-off thing. So sorry about that, but back here, and we'll be back for a Friday podcast as well. So subscribe, do that, and share the podcast. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.